Welcome to the Student Press Law Center podcast for June 2009, a monthly rundown of news about legal developments affecting the student media. The Student Press Law Center is a champion for student voices. We recognize the essential role that free speech and a free press play in a democratic society, and we're committed to nurturing and protecting those freedoms for the next generation. For more information about the center's work, go to www.splc.org. I'm Frank Lomonti, Executive Director of the Student Press Law Center. Thanks for joining us. James L. Buckley has had an illustrious career in public service. He's been a U.S. Senator from New York, Undersecretary of State, and a Federal Court of Appeals judge over a 50-year legal career. So it's unfortunate that in newsrooms and broadcast stations around the country, his name has become sort of a swear word synonymous with the frustration that many journalists encounter when they try to get what should be public information from schools and colleges. And this is because in 1974, Senator Buckley lent his name to a federal law, the Buckley Amendment, that requires schools and colleges to enforce policies keeping students' educational records confidential. The Buckley Amendment is better known by many as FERPA, the Federal Educational Rights and Privacy Act. And to the frustration of many people, not just journalists, but parents as well, who want to know what is going on inside of America's schools and colleges, FERPA has become sort of a catch-all response whenever a request is made for documents under a state Open Records Act. FERPA is supposed to apply only to educational records that contain names, addresses, and so forth, and a number of decisions by courts and Congress over the years have made clear that the law is not supposed to be a blanket excuse for institutions to refuse to disclose whatever information they consider embarrassing or inconvenient. But still, the abuse of FERPA persists, and the Student Press Law Center regularly gets calls from the college media in particular after a college has refused to grant access to documents that ought to be public record. We have seen cases recently in which even obviously non-educational documents, audit reports, minutes of public meetings, and so forth, have been withheld or blacked out like classified CIA documents by schools over-complying with FERPA. Well, Jill Riefenhoff and Todd Jones of the Columbus Dispatch ran straight into the Buckley Amendment roadblock during a six-month-long investigation into NCAA violations by the nation's intercollegiate athletic programs. They heard Buckley Amendment as an excuse so many times that they finally called Senator Buckley himself and asked whether the kinds of documents they were after, for instance, the passenger lists of airplanes that athletic departments sent to and from football games, were intended to be confidential educational records. Not surprisingly, Senator Buckley told them, of course not. Well, reporters Jill Riefenhoff and Todd Jones are joining us today from the Columbus Dispatch in Ohio, and we thank them for being here and sharing with us the story behind their terrific stories, which are available online at the dispatch.com website. And Jill, let's start with you. Your team did not really start out to write a story about the Buckley Amendment, of course. Can you tell us about how this project got started and how it took off in the direction that it did?
This project actually has its roots about 5 years ago when Ohio State University was in the midst of numerous NCAA investigations and problems. And at that point, many different reporters in our newsroom were working on the stories because it had many tentacles. And we had requested many types of documents from Ohio State, including things that we thought were very bland, like the flight passenger manifest. And at that point, those documents came back to us heavily redacted. And so what we did in November is somewhat of an outgrowth of that, because Ohio State has had spent a lot of time with the NCAA in recent years, so much so that we don't really fully know the story in some cases. And we just kept thinking that Ohio State's interpretation of the law has to be extremely strict. So we kind of set out to test that theory, and we sent out public records requests to all the 119 schools that play football in the what's formerly known as Division 1A. So in a sense, we did set out to test the Buckley, what Buckley meant, but it's from 5 years ago that this all began.
Well, give us some examples of the kinds of information that you were requesting and you weren't able to get because the colleges cited the Buckley Amendment.
We requested the flight passenger manifest. We requested a document that's referred to in colleges as the Will Call ticket list, which is basically a list of names of who football players give their tickets to, mom, dad, grandma, next-door neighbor, et cetera. We also requested the forms that football players fill out that indicate where they are working during the summer. Most of those jobs are arranged by coaches through boosters. And then finally, we asked for NCAA violations. All of those records to us as journalists, they shed light on who has access to the athletic department. Some of those people could be agents, some of them could be boosters, and not all of them may have the best interest of the university at heart.
Well, and Todd, what you found after doing this nationwide study of institutions was that the compliance that you got with open records laws was very spotty and very uneven, and there would be schools even within the same state like Ohio that would make judgment calls about the law in very different ways. Can you tell us a little bit about that, how that played out?
Well, it kind of played out as we suspected. It was, and to give credit to Jill, it was her idea to do the project this way, and we found out from her own suspicion that it kind of came true. Some states, some schools were very open with their records. Some states, the schools throughout the state, had various ways that they interpreted the law. And so you have really no consistency at all in terms of how the law is adhered to by these universities. And as the Attorney General in Ohio even said, you know, you can't have, you know, all these different universities in the state of Ohio interpreting a federal law any which way that they feel it should be interpreted. So the basic premise is that, you know, if they're hiding, if they're being so strict with this law in terms of what they redact and what they don't share with the public, what are they hiding? And that's kind of at the heart of the whole story.
Well, and at some point, one of you actually talked to Senator Buckley about what you were finding and about some of the denials that you were getting. Can you tell us a little bit about how that conversation went and what he had to say?
I actually had two different conversations with Senator Buckley. I called him early on in the project, really during the conception, because if he said right off the bat, "Oh no, I absolutely wanted NCAA violations kept secret," then we were barking up the wrong tree. Then the story was dead right then and there. I also called him at that point in time. I suspected that was not what he intended, but I called him at that time as well to get him on the record. I did not know how long this project would take, and frankly, because of his age, I was afraid that, you know, something could happen to him. And coincidentally, 2 weeks after I talked to him, Senator Pell died, who was the co-sponsor on the bill. So I talked to him in November, had him saying that, you know, saying that's not what he intended, this is out of control, Congress needs to do something. And then I went back to him once sort of all the results are in and shared that with him, and he was equally appalled at that point.
Well, and in addition to the fact that the Buckley Amendment was thrown up repeatedly as a roadblock, there were some other roadblocks that you encountered. Todd, maybe you can describe, for example, cost became a roadblock sometimes, where the request was coming from, whether you were a citizen of the state that had the records or not was a roadblock, right?
Right. Some states, such as Tennessee, they have their own, you know, states have different open record laws. In some states, like Pennsylvania, Tennessee, you have to be a resident there to get access to records. Idaho, for example, told me that the person I spoke to at the school said, "Oh, sure, I could see the records, but I had to travel to Idaho and view them in person." And then you had the cost factor. You know, most schools, the average price that they would charge us for the work that entailed to gather these records, photocopy them, and send them to us was probably around $40, $50. Many schools gave them to us for free. And then you had schools like Texas charging $700, Michigan asking for $800, and the king of all requests, University of Maryland, wanted $35,000. So that in itself is a deterrent. I mean, these are public records that anybody in that state has a right to go ask for and see. And if your student, say your child is a student at Maryland and you wanted to see these records, these very records that we requested as a newspaper, they could say to that parent, okay, we'll give them to you, but $35,000. And that's just an absurd way to act as a deterrent to openness.
It sounds like, and you mentioned, Todd, the Ohio Attorney General has taken an interest in this. Is there reason to hope maybe that publicizing some of the worst abuses of open records laws and FERPA through a series like this one is actually going to maybe stir up some public debate and cause some change to come about?
Well, really, the only way the change is going to come about is if Congress steps in and does something about it. And again, if you get the Attorney General or you get different people in the political scene take an interest in it because of the reports, then we've kind of done our job. We can do the reporting, we can put it out there for public debate, and it seems in the immediate reaction to the stories is that, you know, that's exactly what has happened. People are taking interest in the idea, and hopefully the ball will get rolling and maybe something will be done about it on a congressional level.
Jill, let me ask you, since a lot of the people listening to this are going to be journalists themselves at the college and even at the high school level, if you were going back in time and redesigning this project and scoping it out and staffing it and budgeting it, I mean, what are some of the lessons that you learned that might be useful for somebody trying to do a wide-scale public records project like this one?
One thing that we didn't anticipate, that we didn't see coming from a mile away, was the some states, actually a lot of states, their public records laws allow them to recover cost time for staff to pull records and redact and things like that. That is not the case in Ohio, thank God. They've determined that taxpayers have already paid for that sort of thing. So we did not anticipate that. Had we known that, we would have crafted our request. We probably would have made it slightly smaller. We would have asked for the same documents, but we probably would have changed the time frame and some things like that, because that certainly was a deterrent. And we spent a lot of time negotiating with some schools. I'm trying to think of one. I think Eastern Michigan, for example, when they got the request, they sent back, sure, you can have it for $300. And I spent a lot of time researching on the Attorney General's website about the public records law and AG opinions to see if the AG has said, gee, you should really try and give documents to the media for free or at some, you know, vastly reduced cost. So I probably spent an additional, 4 or 5 hours dealing with one school trying to get the cost down. Ultimately, I did, but that's a lot of time, and that was probably the one lesson learned that we just had no idea, because we thought that most state public records laws acted like ours, where the taxpayers have already paid for that information, so they shouldn't have to pay for it again.
So that's an interesting practical tip. It sounds like it may behoove the student requester to get familiar with the law and perhaps engage in a little bit of used car bargaining here, that maybe the first offer isn't the last offer, and maybe there's a way that you can haggle down the agency.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the laws are so very different from state to state. And in Texas, they charge the staff time if you want copies of it, but not the whole thing if you want to just go and look at it. But, you know, for us, a plane ticket to Dallas was just as costly as paying for the records, because there was still something that you had to pay for on top of it once you got there. So, yes, definitely know your state public records laws. And that's true for any story, for any journalist, anywhere, anytime, because they are your best friend.
And to the credit of some schools, they were willing to negotiate. And I remember one instance, I was dealing with Colorado, and the gentleman I was talking with several times, he used to be a managing editor of a newspaper, and so he understood what we were trying to do journalistically, and he finally got to the point and says, listen, I'm just going to give you the records for free. I think he was tired of talking with me, but some schools, you know, some schools were willing to come down on price and end up giving it some of the records for free.
We also played schools against one another. I played Eastern Michigan off a lot of this, you know, all the other schools in Michigan. In one case, it was successful, in the others, it was not. But, you know, well, Purdue gave us the records and Indiana didn't, or things like that, because some schools don't want to be shown up, but it didn't work with Ohio State and Michigan.
I think the thing that's scary about this, too, is here's a newspaper, a big entity with resources behind its name, a branded name, having to negotiate to get these records that the public has a right to see.
Right. What chance would somebody have who doesn't maybe have the sophistication and training of an experienced reporter at a big newspaper?
Oh, exactly. I mean, if a school is going to say to somebody off the street, yeah, they're public records, but, you know, it's going to cost you like $800. The person's going to say, I can't afford that, and drop it.
Just as a last question, did either of you observe that the subject matter that you were dealing with, intercollegiate athletics, posed any special obstacles or maybe any special sensitivities that would cause people to be more protective or less forthcoming with records than that if it was a different topic? I know, Jill, you've worked in many different areas and not just athletics, and you've probably had to make lots of public records requests.
It was interesting. The day we sent our public records request out on the exact same day, and it happened to be that week the National Athletic Directors Conference or something like that was going on, and the Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith, immediately people from different schools were coming up to him saying, what is your hometown newspaper up to? Why are they asking this information? So there was a lot of sort of this backdoor stuff going around. You know, we'd call a school to follow up, and we'd say, we made this request to all the schools. They say, oh, we know. We've already talked to them all. So it was kind of interesting the way that worked, that they were all trying to put their collective heads together to figure out what we were doing. And we did not tell them what we were doing other than asking for this information and that we were looking at some issues related to intercollegiate athletics.
And that's another good tip, by the way, that open records laws are not sensitive to the purpose for which you want the documents. Simple idle curiosity is a perfectly legitimate reason to make a request, and if someone tries to block you from obtaining documents because your reason is not good enough, then that's not a lawful basis to deny a request.
And the schools also tried if you tell us what's going on, we might be able to help you tailor your request so we can get you exactly what you want. That was another sort of way that they were using to try and manipulate to figure out what we were up to. And I would just tell them, I know what I want, and this is what I want, and that's why we asked for it.
Great. Well, that's really, really useful, practical information. And I want to thank you, Jill Riepenhoff and Todd Jones of the Columbus Dispatch, for being with us on the podcast. And I want to recommend that everyone who hasn't seen these articles on dispatch.com, please go take a look at them and please share them with your friends. They're important information, and they might really bring about some good, positive change in this law. And thank you, everyone, for listening to the Student Press Law Center podcast for June 2009. Please check out our website at www.splc.org. And if you're a student, journalist, or an advisor with a question about your legal rights, or if you're interested in advice in starting a campaign for student press rights or for open records and open governments in your own state, you can call our hotline at 703-807-1904, or you can email us at splc@splc.org. Thanks for listening.